You're very welcome to Inside Education, the program that brings you the best from the world of education from an Irish perspective. You can contact the program by Twitter with the handle at Inside Ed, by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie, and you can access hundreds of podcasts of previous programs on seandelaney.com/podcasts. Last week, over 800 mathematics educators from all over the world came to Dublin to discuss the teaching and learning of mathematics. They were attending the 10th Congress of European Research in Mathematics Education in the Croke Park Convention Centre. Among those attending the conference was Professor Janet Babas from the University of Sydney, where she is Professor of Mathematics Education and Research Director for the Sydney School of Education and Social Work. During her time in Ireland, she gave a talk titled Creating a Distinctive Practice-Based Teacher Education Programme Through a Research-Informed Approach. I'm pleased to say that I got to speak with her during her visit to Ireland, and I'll bring you the interview over the next two programmes beginning today. When I met up with Janet Babas, I noted that one of her interests in mathematics was student engagement. I began our conversation by asking her to tell me what she means by student engagement.
Engagement to me is where a child is behaviourally, intellectually and emotionally in tune with the mathematics, totally engaged, enjoy it, participate, where they might have a passion for the content and not just, well, having fun is important in the mathematics, but it's not sufficient to maintain their interest. A lot of teachers might think of engagement as making sure the children are just on task. To me, that's not sufficient. Yes, they need to be on task, but more than that, they need to really have a deep understanding of what's going on. And with that deep understanding, often they develop a passion, a drive for actually wanting to know more. So engagement has been one of those challenges that teachers have faced in all subject areas forever. You know, as long as I can think, even as thinking back to my own time as a student, being engaged, motivated in whatever was happening. Engagement is also something that you can't expect children to be 100% engaged all day, every day, in the same topic or the same content area. It's something that is up and down every minute. And it might change according to what the teacher is saying, the focus of the content, to what might be going on in the rest of the child's life. So engagement is very malleable, very flexible. I could go on.
And if I'm a teacher, how do I know that a child in my class or the children in my class are engaged?
A lot of teachers will look at a child to see if they're on task, and then they assume, okay, they're doing the work, they're engaged. But can they really be sure that a child is intellectually engaged and emotionally enjoying what they do? For example, I've worked with teachers that have said, well, I teach the top class. My children are all excellent at mathematics. They find it easy. They do all the work. So they assume that they're engaged, that they enjoy it. But when they've actually gone and asked the children, you know, do you enjoy maths? Often they will, quite often, even those children who are very good at it will say no, they don't enjoy it. Give them a choice of something else and perhaps they might choose that. So we can't assume that just because a person's good at a subject that they enjoy it. However, being good at it does help a child to develop that enjoyment and that passion for learning more. So if I was to advise a teacher on finding out whether your children are engaged or not, I would advise them to ask the children, right? Question them about the things that they might enjoy doing, why they might enjoy doing it. I actually try to get that information from students in a roundabout way, because often children will tell you what they think you want to hear. So, of course, I'm interested because it's your subject area. I'm not going to tell you anything different. But sometimes I ask through a use of a metaphor. So I might say, look, if mathematics was a food, what would it be? And then you get, oh, it would be chocolate. And they might explain, well, why? And chocolate because it's tasty and smooth and I want more when I taste some. Some of them might say it tastes like Brussels sprouts because I don't like the taste, but I have to eat it because it's good for me. So you learn a lot about children's enjoyment, engagement and interest in maths when they refer to it as something else.
The relationship between being good at the subject and being engaged in it, can engagement come before you're good, or do you have to be good before you really are engaged in it?
Well, I spoke before about having behavioural engagement, emotional and intellectual. Behavioural engagement is important to start with, because if you haven't got a child paying attention, well, how can they develop the intellectual engagement, because they're not listening? So behavioural engagement is important to start off, but not sufficient to continue. Right? So a child could be behaviourally engaged for the wrong reasons. For example, if I don't do well in this test, my parents are going to be crook with me, or I'm going to get into trouble from my parents. Or I'm going to do really well in this subject because I really love the teacher and I want the teacher to think well of me. But that, again, is insufficient. The intellectual engagement is where the child really is switched on to the content. Now, that can only come if they've actually been listening in the first place. Right. And with that, once a child starts to realise that they enjoy something, they then start to get that emotional, wow, this is great. I really want to continue. So they go hand in hand. Right? And interestingly enough, it's the emotional engagement that a student might have is what determines whether they will continue learning mathematics beyond that at which they must learn at school. So that's when they might decide that they want to do further mathematics in high school, or further more difficult mathematics at a university, or want to do a career in mathematics. It's that emotional and intellectual engagement that will determine that, right? So there are some children who might be even not necessarily performing at the top of their class, but they can still experience that intellectual and emotional engagement. And then along with that, the emotional engagement, it is what helps them persist or become more resilient in when things go wrong. They don't go as well on an exam that they were hoping to, but because they've got that emotional engagement, they're willing, and that resilience about, or persistence, I know if I keep trying, I will get it eventually. So the child who used the metaphor once to me, that mathematics was an apple, and they said, because it's really hard to bite into to start, but once you get past that outer skin and you chew into it, it's really sweet and juicy and you want more.
Can children fake engagement? Maybe they're kind of nodding at the teacher and they're doing all the right things physically, or they're pretending to look in their book and their mind is thinking about the football game they're going to play later, or they're thinking about the, what they did last night or whatever. Their mind is elsewhere.
Two important things. I think children, yes, they can fake engagement, again, because they might be doing the task or listening, paying attention for the wrong reasons, and that is that they feel that they'll get into trouble if they don't do what they're supposed to do. But sometimes teachers misread cues. For example, the student that sometimes appears not to be engaged, they could be looking out the window and appear not to be engaged, but maybe they're looking out the window and thinking in their head more deeply about something that the teacher did. A beautiful example I saw in a classroom, a kindergarten classroom, where a teacher had posed a problem about covering the surface of a table with books. And she then set the kindergarten children on a task where they had to cover other things with surface, cover the surface of a whole range of other items in the room, just to explore what covering a surface area and a surface area was. And one little child didn't follow the teacher's directions. I was observing this in the classroom at the time. She went off and got a piece of paper and started drawing boxes and other things. And it turned out that she'd actually been intrigued by the problem that the teacher had posed. And she decided that she wanted to go off and actually find the answer to that problem. So she started working on a totally different task to what all the other children were doing. So the teacher thought she was not engaged. But in fact, she was totally intellectually engaged, but at a slightly different level than what the teacher was thinking.
And what was the task the teacher had posed initially?
The teacher started the lesson with a problem about how many books could cover this table, right? Because her point was she was trying to get across to the children that area was about covering the surface, a total, and with leaving no gaps and no overlaps, right? Which she made that point. And then she just wanted the children, she set the task for all the other children, oh, use all these other items that I've given you, like blocks and pieces of paper, and cover the carpet, cover the other desks or things like that. But this other little girl that I saw was just one little child in a class of like 20 children, and she decided that
she wanted to skip that stage.
Well, right. She was already past that stage, right? And she was already in. She wanted to solve the problem that the teacher had started with, right? So she went off and started drawing a grid, and she did solve the problem, and did some quite complex mathematics in the end to solve the problem. But it wasn't the maths that the teacher had initially thought that the children should be doing at kindergarten level. She ended up doing a very complex mathematical, using multiplication to work out what 6 times 12 was. And she did end up coming out with the correct answer, but not the way the teacher had intended.
And what can teachers do to motivate children to be interested in mathematics or in learning mathematics?
Oh, look, there are so many ways. But the first one I'd think of was modelling it. Show an interest, a passion yourself. I'd also try to get the parents involved, because a lot of the good work a teacher can do can be undone simply by a parent making a comment, oh, my child is not good at maths, or even worse, I was never very good at mathematics when I was at school, therefore I don't expect my child to be, or I understand that my child is not. So parents, getting the parents on board to send the same message in terms of maths is important and you need to continue working at it, and that maths is of value.
And presumably if the children experience success in learning maths, that will be motivational?
Depends on the success. Like they can be successful in a test situation where they might just be getting ticks and they do the mathematics just simply so they get correct answers. But they've also got to learn the value of explaining their strategies, explaining why they got the mathematics correct. So children can get correct maths for the wrong reasons. So I think the important thing is they get the mathematics correct, but have the understanding as well, underlying why they got the correct mathematics.
And how did you become interested in the whole area of mathematics education?
I didn't start off my career as a primary school teacher thinking that I was going to specialise in the area of mathematics. I'd always been good at mathematics myself at school, and I did high-level maths. I did mathematics at university, but I didn't have that emotional engagement with it. Right? I just could get the right answers, but I didn't really have that deep level of understanding about it. However, when I started teaching children, I actually started to develop a love for the mathematics because I realised that to teach mathematics, I needed to understand it at a much deeper level than what I was taught or what I currently felt that I had. So I went back and taught myself a lot of the mathematics. I think I had the mathematical background, but I just hadn't really made some of the connections that I needed to do. And when I had to go and teach it to children, I started making those connections for myself. So I actually found out that I loved teaching mathematics at primary school much more than all the other subjects, which I'd found easy and loved as a student myself at school. So I was always very good at writing and reading at school. And I found it extremely difficult to teach those things because I couldn't understand why the children didn't understand. But with the mathematics, because I'd actually struggled to understand, I could understand why these children couldn't make the connections. So I...
And what kind of connections are you talking about?
Connections about why a particular strategy is more efficient to use than another strategy, why the mathematics might be important in real life, making some of those connections, and particularly making the connections between mathematics and why it's important in real life. But also just even sometimes you've got to make the mathematics, do the mathematics because it can be quite beautiful, some of the patterns that might emerge. So just awakening to look for mathematics is all around you. You've just got to realize it. Finding mathematics in the home, looking at buildings and seeing how they're structured. I actually did a lot of work and had a passion for art and architecture as a student. And it wasn't till I became interested in the mathematics that I realized, oh, you know what, it was actually the pattern that I enjoyed in the art and in the architecture. It was actually the underlying mathematics all the time that I found quite fascinating.
What can research teach us about how children learn mathematics?
A lot of the research that I've been involved in at the University of Sydney and with my colleagues has looked at unpacking motivation and engagement, meaning that it's not just one aspect, one characteristic of engagement that's important. For example, a child's self-concept, their self-belief about whether they can do something is an important element that contributes to their engagement in maths. So a child who believes that they can, maybe they don't understand it now, but they believe in their capacity to develop an understanding. So self-belief is important. I mentioned before about their persistence. So self-belief and persistence are very much connected. Their ability to manage a task. So when they look at something that's quite complex, a mathematical problem that's quite complex, they don't just give up. So again, resilience, but they have a strategy to approach it. So they might chunk it down to manageable parts of a problem.
On several occasions, you've received university and national awards for your university teaching. Can you describe your approach to teaching at university level?
I'm still very passionate about teaching. I've been involved in teacher education for more than 20 years now. But from the very start of my teacher educator career, the thing that really drove me, or that I was passionate about doing, was ensuring that my student teachers would not get out and teach mathematics, but other subjects as well, just the way they were taught. Right? Because one of the biggest problems that we have, particularly in mathematics education, is that teachers will often teach maths the way they were taught, which is understandable because how can you teach something if you've never seen it taught a different way? So you teach it the way you are familiar. I wanted to make sure that if there was a more effective way of teaching it, what was the best way for me to help my student teachers develop, not just develop the knowledge around that practice, all those practices, but to learn how to enact it in the classroom. So linking the theory and the practice of effective teaching has always been my underlying drive for the things that I've done in teacher education.
Can you give an example of what a teacher education class that you're teaching might look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's evolved over the years, but what it might look like now is I've already done, would have done a lot of planning before every, let's say my tutorials were much more interactive with my students. I would have isolated what the practice is that I want to focus on for my class.
So what might that be?
A practice might be something like eliciting student reasoning and responding to student mathematical reasoning, though it could be reasoning in any subject area. So this is a really important practice that teachers need to have in any discipline, is to be able to elicit from children what they might be thinking about at the moment, and then at thinking about, well, all right, I've done that now. I've got from the children what they're thinking, but now what do I do with that information? How do I respond? How do I get the children to move forward in their strategy? So this is an important practice which teachers need to develop. So I might go into my class thinking, well, that's the major practice that I want my student teachers to develop. I might then model a lesson for this, or a part of a lesson, an introduction to a lesson or part of a lesson, and use my student teachers as the pretend children. As I work through the lesson or model it for them, I might then unpack it. I finish off and might unpack it a little bit and say, well, why did I do this? How did I do that? How did you feel when I did that? I also would have a prepared lesson plan that I wrote. I would give it to the student teachers after I had done my plan, because I want to show them that good teaching doesn't just occur incidentally. Good teaching is planned. So I show this is, I have my own lesson plan for the lesson I've just modeled. So I would, again, we'd go through what were the steps I followed. Can you see that I followed this lesson plan? Even though I'd left some clear, I had some clearly articulated steps I wanted to go through to elicit your thinking about a problem or about a mathematical computation, I had actually left some room for improvisation in there, because I could not anticipate every strategy that was thrown at me or that was given to me by the children in the class. So I've left some room for improvisation. But I've tried to develop a clear step or how I could articulate to get to the point that I wanted to about eliciting their thinking strategies. I would then in my class also hopefully have some video of a classroom, of a teacher doing something similar. So I try to use YouTube videos or videos that are free for anyone to use, because I want my student teachers to access the video themselves later after class, because sometimes the videos are very long and I want to focus in on one or two practices. So I try to use those videos that other people can access quite easily. And that's hard. That's taken a long time to actually find some, but there are quite a few out there. I have in the past made some of my own, but I found that to do a really good quality job of video, I don't have the resources to do that. So I'm a little bit reliant on finding and accessing some good ones out there. So I have a few that I rely on.
And are there any particular authors of teaching videos that you go to on YouTube?
I use Teaching Channel a lot. A lot of the videos that are on the Teaching Channel have emerged from the Core Practices Consortium in the US. Right? So there's a good website, the Teacher Education Development, I think it's the TED website that is based in the University of Washington. And that has some links to some really nice videos, which you can also then access through YouTube or through the Teaching Channel.
Okay, so you have students then who are well prepared to teach and to implement these practices in schools, but when they go to schools, they encounter what established and experienced teachers do in the school, which may be not necessarily consistent with what you've been promoting. How do beginning teachers, novice teachers, teach in a way that is different from that of their colleagues, if that is the case?
Well, you highlighted a really important aspect, and that is that enactment, that link between what we might have done in the tutorial at university and how I move it, or how I can translate, get my student teachers to translate that into the classroom, so they are confident enough to then go out to a school by themselves and meet with some resistance from other staff that don't understand what's going on or what my student teachers are doing. So at the university, after I might have shown videos of what the practices might look like, I then get my student teachers to rehearse it with co-teachers, meaning they take on co-teaching, they work with a colleague, they plan a little segment of a lesson, they then teach it to their peers, so this co-peer teaching, while I'm in the classroom and while they have a little audience of the rest of their peers. And while they're doing that, it's a little bit like a rehearsal when you're on stage, right? Like you're doing in drama, where myself as a director, I can stop what's going on at any time and say, okay, cut or pause, and ask them a question about what they might have just said, or could you say that a different way? Or I might model for them, how about you say it this way and explain why very quickly, but then say, okay, now do that again. So that rehearsal is very much like a rehearsal for an actor. They might not get to do the whole lesson that they'd planned. They do a little bit, we stop, we unpack what they might have just said, what they might have just done. So they've rehearsed it. Then following that, I have a very close relationship with a few partner schools around the university. The following week, we might then go to one of those partner schools. My student teachers spend 2 hours in the school. The first 30 minutes might be they get to rehearse the same what they're about to teach to children. They rehearse with their peers, so co-teaching with their peers again. They then have a small group of children, and they teach the same lesson they just taught their peers with a small group of children. It's very tightly scaffolded process. So by the end, they do it with the children, and that's when they have the aha moment, and they suddenly realize that the things that they had practiced or anticipated did come true, but a whole lot of other things that they couldn't anticipate also had happened. But because they were so well planned, they could think of ways to cope with the children's unexpected strategy. So we then have another debriefing session after that. It's only after then do my student teachers then go out to a full class, and where I might not be present, where they might have to then face the criticism or the questioning from other teachers.
And that is how Janet Bobbis helps beginning teachers to prepare for working in classrooms. I'll bring you the final extract from my interview with Janet on next week's programme, and I want to thank her for the time in recording the interview. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event in a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to podcasts of all previous programmes on seandelaney.com/podcasts. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.